Okay, we're beginning here, 14 lines down on Yutet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to discuss how do we know that Hulin does not require a Kavanah when one does Netilat Yadayim and one goes to the Mikveh. We attempted to bring a proof from the case by Gal Shenitlash with the wave that had separated out. The Gemara and rejected that proof and said maybe it's a case where he's actually sitting and waiting for the wave to come. And the reason it's a Chiddush when he's sitting and waiting for it is because we could have possibly thought we be gozer either atu chardolit shel gishamim or rashim atu kipim. The fact that we don't do that is the chiddush of that Mishnah. So now the Gemara introduces another possibility, el mihad etnan. We learn it out from this Mishnah. Perot shenaflu l'toch amatamayim. You have fruit that fell into a water channel. Upashat mishi adav tmeot. Someone whose yadayim were tmeot, he puts his hands in there, v'natalan, and he pulls out the fruit. The fruit fell in there by accident. He goes in to remove the fruit from there. So these fruits that fell in it by accident into this water channel, when he puts his hands in there, the hands become tahor, because now he's dipped his hands into the running water, the mei mayan. Uperot enan b'chiyutan. And the perot are not mukshar the kabel tuma. They are not primed or ready now to accept tuma. In order to be ready to accept tuma, a piece of food, fruit, has to have a liquid wash over it. It can be any one of the seven liquids represented by Yad Shachat Dam. One of those is obviously water. But it has to have a requirement of Chiyutan. There the Pasuk says about the water, Chiyutan, but it's spelt in the Pasuk, Chiyutain. So Chiyutan means that when water fell on it, in the passive sense. Chiyutain means that you actively put water on it. From that, Chazal learned out that it has to be Chiyutan, Dumya de Chiyutain. When water goes on the fruit, it has to be something that you want. Even if it happens passively, meaning it happens without your intervention, as long as you want it to happen, then it's a muksha the kabel tuma. So in this instance, you just dipped your hands in, pulled the fruit out. You were not interested in the water. You were not interested in the fruits being in the water. Therefore, they're not muksha the kabel tuma. Because the perot einan b'chiyutan. You had no interest in them getting washed or the water going over them in this water channel. If when he puts his hands in there, he has intention just to wash his hands off. They were dirty, and he wants to wash his hands off. Then, Yadav Torot, his Yadayim work in their Tahor, or because they were dipped now into the running water. Va'perot, and these perot, arehein b'chiyutan, now have a classification of being mukshar the kabel tuma. Because when you want the water there, it doesn't necessarily have to be the water specifically to wash the fruits. Just means that you have to want the fruits in the water. Here you have a benefit of the fact that when you put your hands in there, you washed your hands off. So since the fruits fell in there, you got to wash your hands off. You want that water. If you want that water can act to be makshir the kabel tuma for the fruits, even though it has nothing to do with the fact that you wanted these fruits to be washed. So here you have from this Mishnah that we just quoted, it's pretty clear here that he has no intent to be mitayer his hands. He's either just dipping them in without any intent, or he's going to wash his hands, and in both cases, his hands are teorim. Eitave Rabbo the Rav Nachman. Rabba challenges Rav Nachman and says, Atovel l'chulin, v'chukzak l'chulin. In our Mishnah, it says that if someone went in to go to the mikveh to be tahor l'chulin, then he is established or sets the bar that he's tahor for chulin, but asur the maser. But then he's still problematic with regards to maser. V'chukzak in. Only if he intended to do it for chulin does it work. Lo chzak lo. But if he didn't intend, there would be no benefit in going to the mikveh. Rav Nachman responds and says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means like this. Even though he was established for chulin, asur the maaser. Going in for chulin is not enough to cover you for maaser. That means that even though you had intention, if he had no intention whatsoever, of course, it wouldn't work for maaser. But even if you intended for chulin, that would not be good enough for the maser. Eitavei, we challenge this from our Mishnah. The next part of our Mishnah says, Taval, below chukzak. He went into the mikveh and he didn't have anything in mind. No intent. Kilolo taval. It's as if he never went into the mikveh at all. My love, kilolo taval klau. Sounds like he didn't do anything then. Lo, kilolo taval the maser. If you go in there without any intent, then you go down to the lowest level. The lowest level is chulin. Aval taval the chulin. But it's still a good enough tevila for chulin. So what it means here is that when you go in without any intent, then you're just dropped to the lowest level, which means chulin. Savar, dochi kamidachile. Rava thought that Rav Nachman was just giving him shver answers, difficult answers, just to get out of the problem. Nafak dok vashkach. But he went out and searched to see if he could find something that supported this position that Rav Nachman was telling him. And then he found, Tanya, he found a braita, Taval Velo Chuzak, person who went to the mikveh and had no intention at all, Asur the Maaser. He may not interact with Maaser, Umutar the Chulin, but he's okay for Chulin. So you see over here from this braita that without any intention, you do get Tara for Chulin, you just don't get Tara for Maaser, exactly the way that Rav Nachman had explained our Mishnah. Amar Abelazar, Taval Vala, Machzik Atzmo Lechol Mashiyirtzeh. Abelazar says, once the person has gone to the mikveh and comes out, as long as he's still wet, he can make a decision about why he went to the mikveh. Meitaveh, is that really true? Odeo Raglo Achat B'mayim, if one of his legs is still in the water, Hukzak the Davarkal, if he had decided he was going to the mikveh for Maser, for something lighter, Machzik Atzmo Lechol Davarkamur, he can upgrade the Tara that he's experiencing or attaining now. So if he went in with the intention to be mitar himself for Maser, and then as he's coming out, he thinks, you know what, I want it for Truma as well. As long as his leg is still in the mikveh, he can do that. Allah, as soon as he exits, Shuvenu Machzik. He can't do it anymore. So that would be against what we just saw from Rabbi Lazar. My love, Enu Machzik Lau. What does it sound like from here that you can't do anything? Once you're out of the mikveh, you have no right to determine the intention or the purpose of your going to the mikveh. The Gemara says, "Lo, odeyu, if he's still in the mikveh, afal pishu uzak makzik. If he was in the mikveh still, then if he had decided for one item, he can change his mind. So for instance, if he had decided for maaser, he can change it to truma, he can change it to kodesh, as long as he's still in the mikveh. Allah, if he already left the mikveh, imlo uzak, if he had nothing in mind while he was in the mikveh, makzik, he can make his decision at this point. But if he had already made his decision in the mikveh, in a makzik, he can't change it at all. So actually, there'll be three different dinim. While you're in the mikveh, you can make any decision that you want about your level of tara. That means both upgrade, downgrade, move it around, and do whatever you want. When you're out of the mikveh, the only decision that you can make is, if you have yet to decide what you want to be, you can decide at that point what tara that you want. The in-between case is, if you are in the mikveh and exiting the mikveh, and you've already decided what tara you want, then as long as you're still partly in the mikveh, you can change your mind and upgrade the tara that you are attaining through going to the mikveh. So those are the three different things that come out of the braita, as well as the statement of Rabbi Elazar. Now, from this Gemara, it makes it sound in the conclusion that as far as chulin is concerned, you do not need any dat, you don't need any kavanah. Not for Netilat Yadayim, and not for Tvila. If that's the case, then when it comes to Netilat Yadayim for bread, what we do when we are doing Netilat Yadayim for Chulin, it would seem that you need no intention over here in order to wash your hands. And that is probably the mainstream thought of many of the Rishonim. The Rashba, on the other hand, believes that even when you wash Yadayim for bread for Chulin, you must have intent that you're doing it to eat the bread. And if you don't have intent for it, it doesn't work. Meaning that if water just fell on your hands and happened to wash your hands, that would not work because you need specific intent for washing one's hands for the purpose of eating bread. Now, what does the Rashba do with our Gemara? So the Rashba suggests that the Gemara in Chulin is the one basis for his position, and our Gemara over here is not relevant. Either because that our Gemara here is talking about someone who's trying to do Chulin al Tarata Truma, and he just wants to come into contact with the object, not necessarily eat it. And over here, you don't need kavanah for that. That's one possible answer. Other possibility is this is that Rabbi Akiva, who says that a person's hands become a rishon l'tuma. Or there's another possibility that our Gemara is talking about tuma and tara. Tuma and tara, with regards to tuma and tarot, nothing to do with the takana of srach truma, which is the reason why one must wash their hands for bread. And so the issues are totally separate. Our Gemara is talking about simple tuma and tara. It's not talking about washing for the srach truma, for the need to wash one's hands before one eats truma. As far as srach truma is concerned, washing one's hand for bread, you would need kavanah in order to wash one's hands. And therefore, the Rashba concludes that you do have to have kavanah when you wash for eating bread. The Shulchan Aruch, Paskins, and Aruch Chaim, that the chatchila, when one does nitilat yadayim, he should have intent that he's washing in order to eat the bread, based on what the Rashba says. Of course, b'diavad, if he didn't, it works. The Rama writes in V'yeh Siman Kuf Nun Chet that if one did wash without kavanah, then based on the Rashba, a person should wash his hands again, just do it without a bracha, to be choshesh for the shita of the Rashba. So in general, we do try to have in mind that when one is washing, they're washing specifically with the intent to eat bread. And therefore, one wants to use the Netilat Yadayim in the morning to eat bread. He has to have in mind when he does that Netilat Yadayim, that's also for washing his hands later on in the day when he's going to eat bread. And one has to have kavana in order for the Netilat Yadayim to work. If he doesn't have kavana b'diavad, maybe you can use it according to the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says he still should wash again without a bracha, because we really are choshesh for the shita of the Rashba, who says that you need kavana when you wash your hands. Now the Gemara continues and says, Mantana odeo raglo achat b'mayim. Who's the author of this braita that says you're allowed to change your mind as long as one of your legs is still in the mikveh? Amar Rabbi Padat, Rabbi Yehudahi. Rabbi Padat says that the author of that position is Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Mikvish nimdad, you measured up a mikveh, b'yeshba arbaim sa mikuvanot. You have exactly 40 sa in this mikveh. V'yardu shnayim, and two people went in to become tahor in this mikveh. V'tavlu zechar zeh, they went in a sequential manner into the mikveh. Harishon tahor, the first one who went in is tahor because he entered into a mikveh that was 40 sa'a, and therefore he's tahor. V'sheni tameh, the second one is tameh because the second one, when he went in, there was already chaser. It's chaser because the first guy who walked out of the mikveh took some of the water with him. If it was exactly 40 sa'a when he went in, it's certainly not 40 sa'a when he leaves. And therefore, the sheni is tameh because he doesn't have 40 sa'a of water. Amri Yehuda, imayu raglav shel harishon noel b'mayim. If the first individual still has one of his legs in the mikveh, hafa sheni tor. That helps the sheni. Means the water on the body of the first one is still considered to be attached to the mikveh and included in the 40 sa'a, as long as some part of his body is still in the mikveh. So if one of his legs is still there, it's considered to be attached. So you see from this that Rabbi Yehuda believes that as long as you have one part of your body in the mikveh, it's as if you are still in the mikveh. Amrav Nachman, Amrabba Baravua, Machloket Bimalot Dirabanan. This Machloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama is in issues of Malot Dirabanan, Tuma Dirabanan. Avol Mituma Latara, Diriagol Hasheni Tameh. Even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that if it's a Tuma Doraita, it only works if you have 40 sa'a in the mikveh. Having your leg still hanging over the mikveh and attaching it won't work. For Dine Dirabonon and Malot of Tuma Dirabonon, that's enough to have your leg in there. But for Dinim Doraita, that's not the case. Vainu de Rabbi Padat. And that is the position Rabbi Padat, which Rabbi Padat says that Mishnah of keeping his leg in there and deciding about which level of Tahara he's attaining is authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Tanakhama disagrees and says by Malot Rabbanan, it doesn't work either. So that's why Rabbi Padat concluded that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of that Braita. Ikedamre. Some say Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Machlokim in Tumala Tahara. The machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama here is only in Dinim Doraita. Ava Malot Dirabanan, Divrei HaKol, Af HaSheni Tahor. But in Malot Dirabanan, even the Tanakhama agrees that when you have your leg in there, it's enough to be considered 40 sa'a, and you don't have to go to the mikveh again. Now, if that's the case, then Upliga de Rabbi Padat. That would disagree with Rabbi Padat, because Rabbi Padat's conclusion is that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this Braita that says Raglo Achat. Well, that would only be true if the Tanakhama disagreed. But according to this statement of Rav Nachman Amar Rav Avua, even the Tanakhama agrees when you're talking about Tuma de Rabbanan or Tahara de Min de Rabbanan or Malot de Rabbanan, he agrees that having the leg in there is sufficient. You don't need anything more. For Doraita, there he argues. So even the Tanakhama would agree in our case where he wants to change his mind about the Tahara or the level of Tahara, which is Malot de Rabbanan, even the Tanakhama would agree, and he could even be the author of the Braita. And that would be against this position of Rabbi Padat, who says Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Braita and not the Tanakhama. Amar Ula. I pose this question to Rabbi Yochanan. Li Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda's position here, Maula had bio machtin vitzinoriot berosho shel rishon. What happens if I want to take a small kli, like a needle, a sewing needle, or a small fork, which they use either for weaving gold or for moving around the strings or the threads? These are very small items that require very little water to be covered. So you want to put them in the mikveh to become tahor. So what? Instead of putting them in the mikveh, you put them on top of the head of the first guy. Good achit itle the Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that the water on the individual is considered attached to the mikveh when we're talking about the water going downwards. So therefore, when the leg of the individual is still in the mikveh, we assume that the water on his body, good achit, drops down. It's considered attached to the mikveh. But good asik lele. But as far as the water in the mikveh rising to attach to the water on the individual, we're not going to say that. So the machtins in a row down on the top of the head of the first guy are not going to be considered as if they're in the mikveh. Oh, Dilma, good asik, namidle. Or maybe even either direction, Rabbi Yehuda says that the mikveh now is considered to be one big mikveh, whether you're going into the mikveh itself or on top of the individual. The water now becomes one through that attachment. Amidle, tinitua. We have a tosefta that answers this question. Shalosh gamamiyot benachal. You have a river that along the way has three depressions or ditches, one on top of the other. There is an upper one, a middle one, and a lower one. The upper one has 20 sa'a in it, and the bottom one has 20 sa'a in it. And the middle one has 40 sa'a, has a full 40 sa'a. So the middle ditch is clearly kosher as a mikveh. The question now is about the upper ditch and the lower ditch, which only have 20 sa'a. Are they considered to be attached to the middle one, and therefore they're classified as a kosher mikveh, or are they considered to be separate entities, and they're not a kosher mikveh? So here we say, in this Tosefta, we say that there was a chardalit shel gishamim of Rebbeinam. There was this rainwater that was running between the different ditches. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, Meir Hayaomer, Rabbi Meir would say, Matbil Bel Yonah, you're allowed to go into the top one as a mikveh. So what you see here is that Rabbi Meir believes that the upper one is also a kosher mikveh. We say good achit. The water from the middle one is considered to be attached to the low one through the chardalit shamayim, as well as the fact that the upper one is considered to be attached to the middle one. We say good asik. The mikveh in the middle goes up and attaches to the mikveh above. So Rabbi Meir says in either direction that it's fine as a mikveh. Whether you're going up or down, the mikveh is kasher. The 40 sa'a in the middle help the mikveh at the bottom, which is only 20 sa'a, and helps the mikveh above it. That's also only 20 sa'a. And the fact that Rabbi Yehuda does not argue in this braita seemingly indicates that Rabbi Yehuda believes the same thing, that it's good achit and good asik. Meir says, Vatanyo, don't we have a braita, Rabbi Yehuda Omer? Meir Hayah Omer. We have Rabbi Yehuda who says that Rabbi Meir used to say, Matbil Bel Yonah, that you're allowed to go into the mikveh on the top one, similar to his position in the Tosefta that we just quoted. Va'ani Omer. But Rabbi Yehuda says, I say, betachtona v'lo bel yona. He can go into the lower one, but not the upper one, which seems to indicate that there's only good achit, according to Rabbi Yehuda, not good asik. Amalei, Tanya, Tanya. Rabbi Yochanan says, if you have a braita that says that, then Rabbi Yehuda must hold that only good achit applies. You can only have it go downward and attach to the mikveh. You can't have it go upward and have the mikveh be mitayer or something that's above. So at first we thought that Rabbi Yehuda agreed with Rabbi Meir's position, but then we found a braita where it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda argues on Rabbi Meir's position. Rashi says he doesn't understand the Gemara whatsoever, because why does the Gemara conclude that one braita is better than another braita? And he says, "Ublashon aktub b'sfarim eni yochol amida." Based on the Gemara, the way it's written in our Gemaras, I don't understand it. Dim came matnita kashin adodi. You have a steer in the brightot. My chazit decided the bright right. And why are you supporting the latter brighta instead of the first brighta? You could answer, which is that the first brighta doesn't give you any information. The first brighta just tells you what the position of Rabbi Meir is. We assumed what Rabbi Yehuda's position is. Then the second brighta comes along and clarifies for us what Rabbi Yehuda's position is. And it sheds light on the first brighta. And they don't necessarily disagree. And therefore, there's no reason to assume that the first braita or the diok out of the first braita is correct. We are just getting more information from the second braita. That's probably the way to answer Rashi's question on the Gemara. Tosafot has a much more difficult issue with the Gemara, which is that we have in other places that a katafres, which is any water on a decline or incline, is not sufficient to attach different bodies of waters to make them into mikvaot. And that is based on a mishnah in Tarot, Perchet Mishnatet, that says a katafres vaha nitzok are not considered to be a chibur. They're not considered to be an attachment for mikvaot. So Tosafot has to reconcile that with our Gemara over here, which seems to indicate that there is an attachment that's made here by the chardalit shel mayim. So Tosafot answers in a number of different ways. One of his answers is that in our case here, there's a kosher mikveh in the middle, and that's what makes the difference. In the cases in the Mishnayot in Tarot, over there, there is no kosher mikveh. All the bodies of water have 20 sa'a in them, and that's why they cannot be mechubar. But once you have a mikveh that's already kosher, then the katafres or the chardalit shamayim can allow you to attach to other bodies of water because you already have established one mikveh that is completely kosher. That's one possibility. The other possibility Tosafot suggests over here is because of a concept of sofo leret, that a kataphras is considered to be a fibor when the natural flow of the water is to go down. In the end, the water will move from where it is down to the lower area. When the kataphras is simply water that's flowing between them, but it's not a given that the upper body of water will automatically flow down to the lower body of water and empty out into the lower body, then it's not considered a chibur. But if, by definition, the upper body of water will flow down to the lower body of water, then the kataphras will be considered a chibur in that case, because in the end, all the water will end up going down this way. And so we just preempt it by saying there's a chibur, there's a connection over here, prior to the fact that the water has come down and joined the lower body of water. In addition, Tosafot brings up the question that Rashi asked on the Gemara, and he says that the Rabbeinu Chananel actually had a different girsa over here, and that the girsa in the first braita was this: Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Meir Haya Omer, Bitachtona Velo Be'Elyona. Rabbi Meir says that the Tachtona works, but not the upper one. Dile Gud Achit Velo Gud Asik, because he allows the water to flow down and be a chibur, but not to go up and be a chibur. Michlau, from there you would have inferred that Rabbi Yehuda Idle Gud Asik. The Rabbi Yehuda does have Gud Asik because he argues on Rabbi Meir. It sounds like he's saying this name Rabbi Meir, but he doesn't agree. V'ha Tanya, don't we have a braita that says Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Meir Omer, Ben Tachtona, Bel En Yona, that means both up and down for Rabbi Meir. Alma Leitle Gud Asik. And then Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says that I only think down and not up. So then, what about the fact that you have a stira on the braita? Now it's just basically the opposite of what we had in our Gemara, but you have a stira on the braita. Gemara says in the end, no, that the first braita is Rabbi Yehuda explaining his position in the name of Rabbi Meir. That when Rabbi Yehuda says Meir Omer Lo Be'El Yonah, he's saying that in the dat of Rabbi Yehuda. Of all the Svarish Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir himself, then it's even the El Yonah. And therefore we can reconcile the two positions of Rabbi Yehuda, which is Rabbi Yehuda in the first braita says no El Yonah, and Rabbi Yehuda in the second braita says no El Yonah, and that's how the Rabbeinu Chananel reconciles it. It's somewhat akin to what I had suggested would be the solution for Rashi in the previous case, which is that we tried to make a diuk, and then we see that the other braita says the diuk's incorrect, and then we put the two of them together, and we explain that the first braita, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, was talking about Rabbi Yehuda's position, not Rabbi Meir's position. Or, the way that I explained it before, was that we made a diuk that Rabbi Yehuda agreed with Rabbi Meir. We see another braita which tells us that's just not the case, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he just didn't say that in the first braita in the Tosefta. And now the Gemara continues and says, Mani Matznitan. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbanani. Must be the Rabbanan. Deshanilu ben Chulin de Maser. The Rabbanan who argue on Rabbi Meir we saw in yesterday's daf, who differentiate between Chulin and Maser. Because our Mishnah gives different gradations, and one of those gradations is Chulin, and the other one is Maser. So it shows you that there is a distinction between Chulin and Maser. But Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah? It says, Big Day Amaretz, Midras Leprushim. That the clothing of an Amaretz are problematic. They have a din of Abatuma for the Prushim. Big Day Prushim, Midras Lochle Truma. And the Begadim of the Prushim are now problematic for people who eat Truma. There is no Maser over here. We just go from Amaretz to next level to Truma. There's only one level in between, which would include both Chulin and Maser. Atan Rabbi Meir. The Amar Chulin and Maser Gadadi Ninu. That sounds like Rabbi Meir, again from yesterday's daf, who says that Maser and Chulin have the same din. Reisha Rabbanon v'Sefer Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah now sounds like the Rabbanon are the Reisha, and the Sefer is Rabbi Meir. You have two authors to the Mishnah. Gemara says in, Reisha Rabbanon v'Sefer Rabbi Meir. Eino Chanami. You have dual authorship of the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah is talking in the position of the Rabbanon. The latter half of the Mishnah is talking in the position of Rabbi Meir. V'vach Rabado matni lo b'Sefer. Rav Adar Bava in his Mishnah has an additional stage, Chamesh Malot. He had five categories, meaning that he also added in Maaser. He had Prushim, Maaser, Truma, Kodesh, and Chatat. By doing that, Umukela Kula Kirabonon. He established the whole Mishnah like the Rabbonon, that there actually is five stages, and that there is a difference between Maaser Chulin, not only in the Reisha, but also in the Seifa, and the Rabbonon will be the authors of the entire Mishnah. Okay, we're gonna stop over here, two lines from the bottom, on Yutet Amud Bet.